Support for WMNF comes from our members and Creative Loafing, in print and on the street every Thursday and online all the time at cltampa.com. In addition to news and politics, music, food and drink, arts and entertainment, and their green community, CL has recently launched two new sites, sports and LGBT, cltampa.com. I'm Duncan Strauss, really delighted to bring you another edition of Talking Animals, in which we'll be discussing Forks Over Knives, a powerful acclaimed new documentary with its creator and executive producer, Brian Wendell. First, though, as always, we're kicking off the show with an animal tune. This is Big Joe Turner with the Chicken and the Hawk here on Talking Animals.
Well, a girl had chicken, fell in love with a chicken hawk. Well, a girl had chicken, fell in love with a chicken hawk. She fell head over heels for that hawk sweet talk. She said, take me up, hawky, take me up in the sky. She said, take me up, hawky. A little bit of chicken and I don't know how to fly. Get up, up and away. We gonna fly all day. Up, up and away. We gonna fly all day. Up, 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 up and away. He made a bald eagle flying up there in the blue. He made a bald chicken from you. Well, the hawk starts flying like a PA single jet. Well, the hawk starts flying like a PA single jet. He said, cool down, chicken. The eagle ain't got it yet. Get up.
That was Big Joe Turner with the Chicken and the Hawk. An animal song of sorts leads us into today's edition of Talking Animals. My name is Duncan Strauss, here with our program that is devoted to all subjects in the animal kingdom. In just a few minutes, we'll be speaking with today's guest, Brian Wendell, creator and executive producer of Forks Over Knives, a powerful acclaimed new documentary presenting an array of scientific evidence that most degenerative diseases could almost always be prevented, and in many cases reversed, by adopting a whole foods, plant-based diet. We'll discuss various aspects of the Forks Over Knives film, including the prominent biochemist and surgeon, who each did separate but pioneering studies, and those are at the core of the film. And we speak with Brian Wendell in a few moments here on Talking Animals, and as usual, we'll also welcome your questions and comments at 813-239-9663 or by email at dj@wmnf.org. Also, a bit later in the show, we'll step into the Comedy Corner, play Name That Animal Tune, and the winner will receive a pair of tickets to the 59th Annual Florida Folk Festival held this weekend at White Springs, featuring John Anderson, Billy Dean, and over 300 other entertainers. And we'll speak with Rayanna Sachs, the founder and CEO of Little Cats Rescue, which is holding a fundraiser tomorrow night. Right now, though, it's time for animal news and announcements. Look at items of interest in animal news, as well as announcements of local events So let's turn now to interesting and or notable developments in animal news. Let's talk turkey, as it were. Produced as always by the Talking Animals award-winning Rip and Reese News Department, that is. Our first item, well actually first I want to say a word about Randy Savage. 4 weeks ago today, when we were at the end of our interview with animal behaviorist Wendy Kelly, Randy Savage called in. We were running very late at that point in the show. I was sort of gilding the lily, actually, to put another call in the air, and finally just ran out of time, and I had to drop the call. And the way it ended there drew kind of a variety of responses, and I felt badly about the way I handled it. But anyway, I was very just upset and mortified when I heard that Randy had died suddenly and unexpectedly on Friday, and I was deeply touched. And I read that Randy will be cremated and his ashes spread near the tree where his beloved dog Hercules' ashes were spread a few years ago. So rest in peace, Randy Savage. From the Associated Press, headline, probe into panhandling dog at NYC ballparks. This is headline. It says, an animal welfare group is investigating the treatment of a panhandling dog known for holding a pipe in his jaw for hours outside New York City's professional baseball stadiums. The American Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals said it sent investigators to Yankee Stadium Sunday to look into allegations by some baseball fans who say the dog named Coffee is being abused by its owner. But the ASPCA said Monday they were unable to locate the dog or its owners. The dog is often dressed in a Groucho Marx disguise and team jerseys with signs asking for money. The dog sits outside Yankee Stadium or Citi Field on game days. The Mets said it had notified the authorities. The Yankees did not immediately respond to request for comment. Far more locally here, really important. We've talked about this off and on for quite a while here on Talking Animals. So we just wanted to let you know to consider attending the next Animal Advisory Board meeting, which is tonight, Wednesday, May 25th at 6:30 p.m. to hear the latest update regarding the progress or perhaps lack thereof of the potential new tethering ordinance. It's something, again, we've talked about on the show quite a few times. We've had Barbara Lopresti, who's been sort of the driving force behind the proposed ordinance, and it's met with all kinds of resistance. Meanwhile, this is an ordinance that many, many counties throughout the nation have implemented. So if you care about dogs being tied up, especially as we get into the hot and humid summer months and thunderstorms and all kinds of other things, and some of these dogs are, you know, currently, I guess it's allowed, quote-unquote, to be tied up, you know, hours and hours and hours on end. Anyway, this is ordinance is designed to address that. So scoot over if you can to make your voice heard tonight at that meeting. Starts at 6:30. It's at 601 East Kennedy Boulevard in Tampa, 33609. It's the tall pink glass building, County Center on the second floor. Took this from iVillage. Rocker Pink may love her namesake color, but unfortunately for Selena Gomez, she draws the line at pink horses. On Thursday, Pink went red with rage when she saw a music video crew spraying colored paint on horses near her Malibu home. Quote, if there are any animal activists around Malibu at Lee Cabrillo State Park, there are horses being painted for a stupid music video. Shame. Pop singer tweeted on Thursday, artists should be more aware and responsible for their actions. As it turns out, the pink horses were the responsibility of 18-year-old Disney Channel star Selena Gomez, who was shooting beach scenes for her new music video, Love You Like a Love Song. So then a big Twitter feud broke out and other things, and including comments from PETA and the people on the set saying there was people from the Humane Society or Humane supervising, making sure the horses weren't mistreated and there was a certain kind of paint there was being used, etc. One more reminder about the Kids for Paws contest. That's the one that kids 6 to 13 years old can still get involved in. We're in the home stretch, it's true, but you could still get involved and have fun and help out the Animal Coalition of Tampa. All proceeds for this contest go to the Animal Coalition of Tampa Spay Neuter Clinic. And again, we had Maggie Fitzsimmons, whose idea this contest was on the show a couple of weeks ago. So you could still go to firstgiving.com/ACTampa and quickly get signed up and maybe make a last-minute dash for the contest. But anything you do, of course, is helpful. And this will all culminate in a big awards event June 4th at Seaplain Basin Park in Davis Island from 9 a.m. to 12 with vendors, bounce house, food, music from Gracie Grishup, who we love, Sunset Bridge, games, prizes, and more. So you can always find out more, too, by going to actampa.org. But a great, great contest all the way around, getting kids involved and helping ACT, etc. So a guy whose song we played a year or two ago on Talk Animals, the local guy, Joe Malizia, is playing tonight at the Hideaway Cafe, 1756 Central Avenue, St. Petersburg. And it gets underway around 8:30 p.m., and maybe he'll be playing his dog song. Who knows? And also, speaking of related kinds of shows, Sunday at Skipper's, the Scratch My Back fundraiser, 15th annual benefit concert raising funds for the Humane Society of Tampa Bay, will be happening. Quivering Rhythm Hounds, playing rhythm and blues, the Lint Rollers playing rock, and Johnny G. Lion Band featuring Freight Train Annie will be there. So it gets underway at 5 p.m., and anything you could donate would be great and help the Humane Society of Tampa Bay. So I think that's all we're going to have time for now. Maybe we'll come back a couple more things towards the end of the show. Right now, though, let's step into the Talking Animals Comedy Corner, which involves animal-oriented comedy. This is Andy Ritchie, who recently won the 26th annual Funniest Person in Austin contest. Congratulations to him. It's a piece called Balthazar from Andy Ritchie on today's Comedy Corner on Talking Animals.
This is funny, though. Somebody in my neighborhood a couple weeks ago posted a sign on a telephone pole for a lost falcon. Like the bird. They're like, "We lost our falcon. Help us." I'm like, "I can't. I'm not the Beastmaster. I can't summon wildlife from the sky." It's like, if you lose your dog and you post a sign, like, yeah, there's a chance you get your dog back. But if you lose your falcon, it's gone, dude. Forever. Because it can fly and it hates you. It's not going to be hanging out in the woods one day like, "God damn it, I really miss that hood. Nobody puts a hood on me out here that makes me think I'm asleep. It sucks." It's like, these people are never going to get their falcon back. I was like, well, maybe they'll get their falcon back. Because they're very smart. When they made the poster, they put a picture of the falcon on the poster. Yeah, which is very helpful if you're the one looking for it, right? Because that way you don't show up at their doorstep with the wrong falcon. I think we've all been there before. It's incredibly embarrassing. For all three parties involved, really. Falcon's just like, "Oh, this is not my house." I don't know why the falcon's Jewish in this joke, but it's a Yiddish falcon. And then underneath the picture, they put the falcon's name. Balthazar. And there was a $300 reward for him, too. I guess they're really expensive. So I'm like, whatever. I got nothing better to do this afternoon. I start walking up and on my block like, "Balthazar! Balthazar!" People are giving me spare change. Poor kid's touched in the head.
All right. That was Andy Ritchie with a piece called Balthazar, taken from his new album, King Ding-a-Ling. I'm Duncan Strauss. This is Talking Animals. Our website is talkinganimals.net. It's nearly time to speak with today's guest, Brian Wendell. As I touched on earlier in the show, Brian is the creator and executive producer of Forks Over Knives, a powerful, acclaimed new documentary presenting an array of scientific evidence suggesting that most degenerative diseases could almost always be prevented and, in many cases, reversed by adopting a whole foods plant-based diet. Much of that scientific evidence is provided by a prominent biochemist and a top surgeon whose separate pioneering studies form the core of the film. In addition, the movie's writer-director does what a number of reviews note is sort of the flip side of Super Size Me. And there's also anecdotal evidence from a handful of people with those kinds of diseases who under doctor's tutelage embrace the diet, including one who lives in Tampa. So, with a reminder that we invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663 or emailing us at dj@wmnf.org. Let's welcome Brian to Talking Animals. Brian, hello.
Hello there. Duncan.
How are you? Hey, I just want
to... very well. Thank you.
Good. And did I have it right? Is it Wendell or is it the other accent?
No, you pronounced it correctly.
Okay.
It has two L's even though it's spelled with one.
Okay. All right. Well, I'll keep that in mind for the future. Excellent. Okay. Well, thanks again for joining us today on Talking Animals. And maybe to start out, maybe you could describe the sort of impetus you felt to get this film made. Was there kind of a huge aha moment, or was it more a culmination of circumstances that prompted you to say, hey, this should be a movie, and I got to get it made?
Yeah, well, really, what happened, I've been into this lifestyle, into, you know, to veganism, and actually even the whole food version of veganism for quite some time. And after, really what happened was, after reading the China study, my awareness of these issues became even, like, more so. And the fact, what I really realized was that the information, the science behind this information was so powerful. And I really became frustrated in a way that the news wasn't getting out there. There was a big news story that was not being told. And I started to think of what can I do to actually help get this word out there, and thought about various things, but ultimately decided that a feature film would be a great vehicle to do that. In a way, I wanted to kind of be, you know, for the awareness, wanted to be for the awareness, the film to be for the awareness of this topic, what Inconvenient Truth was for the awareness of climate change. So I decided to make a film about it.
Cool. Well, I want to get back in a moment, and as we cover some other things, this will probably just naturally come up. But, of course, at some point, I'd like you to maybe just explain a little bit more about the China study itself. But first, I mean, you know, in terms of your decision to do this, I mean, unless you're Michael Moore, I mean, no one really sets out these days to make a documentary with the goal of earning big dough. But there are usually a number of other reasons and other goals. I mean, besides getting the word out, were there other goals in mind that you had when you said, hey, well, let's make this into a feature film?
Really, there really weren't any other key goals. That was really it. I mean, for me, there seems to be a lot of suffering going on with people that need not be happening, and also, you know, the way we eat really impacts our environment and the animals and all these things. And it seems like there's a simple solution before us that we're all really overlooking, and a lot of it has to do with the education that we've had growing up, believing that animal-based foods, and there still is that perception in this country, that are actually health foods, when in reality, the evidence strongly suggests that they're not.
So, okay, so you had the one chief goal, but at this point, now that the film's been out for a while, I mean, how do you feel it's going relative to sort of other, I imagine, at least certain kind of expectations that you had in your head? I mean, how do you feel it's going relative to reviews, audience, box office, other kinds of things?
Well, we're getting good reviews on. We're getting very good reviews in the newspapers and stuff. I mean, obviously, there's some reviews that aren't good, but I think our tomato rating on Rotten Tomatoes is about 75%.
Yeah.
And the audience reception, which is incredible, has been absolutely incredible. And on Rotten Tomatoes, for instance, I think we have about a 92 or 93% audience approval rating, which is a lot higher than a lot of other informational docs that have been out there. So the reception's been great. The word's getting out, and you know, we have about 70,000 fans now on Facebook. And just about every day you can go to the page and just read of testimonials of people who've seen the film and are almost instantly changing their diets. It's just, it's really gratifying because really I think the time has come. I think, you know, we've, as I like to say, we've given the animal food diet, we've given the animal-based diet a chance, and it really hasn't worked for us. We've seen obesity and all these diseases go through the roof, and I think it's time for us to do something different.
Well, Brian, there's a couple things that you mentioned I want to come back to in a sec, but first, just kind of mindful that at least a large percentage of those listening to this show today, at least, probably have not had an opportunity yet to see Forks Over Knives, and it's really kind of a multifaceted film in many respects. Maybe you could just sort of briefly describe the film from your standpoint. I mentioned a couple things about it by way of introduction, but what how would you kind of describe it in, you know, 25, 30 words or less?
Yeah, well, the film really looks, well, that's going to be tough in 25 or 30.
All right,
words,
we'll give you, how about 45? We'll give you 45.
I'll do the best I can.
Okay.
But really, the film looks at the claim about whether these so-called diseases of affluence, heart disease, cancer, diabetes, are, you know, almost fully preventable and in many cases treatable with food alone. And to that extent, we really focus the film on two particular researchers, very well-credentialed researchers, T. Colin Campbell, the nutritional biochemist from Cornell University, and Dr. Caldwell Esselstyn, who both grew up on farms, you know, believing that, you know, milk was perfect, was nature's perfect food, believing that we needed to eat meat for protein. And both of these researchers ultimately, they kind of had parallel lives, if you will, not knowing each other, ultimately ended up doing their own research and later in their careers coming to the conclusion that, in fact, these diseases are almost fully preventable and in many cases reversible through diet alone.
Yeah, well, and it really is interesting that they were on very separate but parallel paths, and really I think one of the great strengths of Forks Over Knives is that in sort of making the case for the virtues of embracing what is called in the film, we'll come back to this maybe too, a whole foods plant based diet. The film really does present a wealth of scientific and medical evidence, and maybe this is a good time to come back to what I mentioned earlier, which is maybe you could sort of describe at least a little bit about what the China study is and what its implications are.
Yeah, well, first of all, I'll discuss what the China study isn't, because there's a really common misperception out there. The China study is a book that Colin Campbell wrote that many people think is, they kind of use it synonymously with the large study he did in China, which is not what the book is. It's kind of a misnamed book, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
So when I talk about the China study being an inspiration to me, it wasn't the study in China per se, but his book, The China Study, which had just a tremendous wealth of information in it. It really detailed a lot of his own career, which is really, really very impressive. He did just an incredible amount of work. He came across some interesting information very young in his career, believing, you know, that animal protein was good for you. Discovered in the Philippines that, in fact, that Filipino children are eating more animal protein were actually dying of liver cancer. And then, of course, he went on to he ended up doing some doing laboratory work, and ultimately did a large project in China. All of these things pointed in the same direction, that animal-based foods were detrimental to human health, while whole plant-based foods were not.
Okay, cool. But I want to continue. But I don't know. I know you're on a landline, but I don't know if it's a portable or a cordless. But we're really getting some real breakup on this on your end of the call. I don't know if there's any way to.
I'm actually hearing you breaking up a little bit. I'm on a speakerphone, but let me pick up.
Yeah, maybe that would be better.
Is that better?
Yeah, I think that is, because we were just this was a little fluttery there. But that's the thing. I mean, you've got sort of a prominent biochemist from Cornell and a prominent surgeon from the Cleveland Clinic. And again, as we've already touched on, I mean, they were sort of on independent, separate, but very parallel paths with the kind of research that they were doing. To what extent was this makes me wonder, Brian, what extent was the power of the medical pharmaceutical kind of machinery a factor in how you shaped the film? Was that a factor at all, or I mean, mindful
that it was not a fact? It was not a factor at all. In fact, that's why I made it as a feature film.
Yeah,
I could have really have gone to the cable companies and made this as a cable documentary.
Yeah.
But knew that the network execs would want to have a say in the film, and certainly their advertisers wouldn't like a lot of the things that we say in the film. So the film really has zero influence. It's really my expression.
Right.
And it really I can't say, this is why I went this route.
Sure. Well, no, because I mean, part of the reason I ask is that early on, there's a little clip of a couple of clips actually of Bill Maher at one point saying something like, there's no money in healthy or dead people. The money is in the middle.
There's no money in healthy people. There's no money in dead people. The money is in the middle.
Right.
People who are alive, sort of.
Right. And that's early on in the film. But I guess part of the reason I'm asking this too is what it sort of foreshadows, which, is always what's interesting when people sort of take on the medical or pharmaceutical establishment, is that later in the film, it's indicated that Dr. Campbell, once he kind of adjusted and sort of clarified his own views through all his own life and research experiences, was sort of marginalized at Cornell and sort of, all of a sudden some opportunities and classes and some other things that he had for years, weren't available or sort of he was, certain class was canceled, things like that. So,
yeah, sure.
It just feels.
That's definitely one of the heartbreaking things about Colin Campbell's career is that really, if his findings had been taken seriously by the people at his own university, you know, maybe the history of nutrition in this country might have been a little bit different. But, you know, it turns out that there were people at his own university, including the department chair, who had very close ties to the dairy industry and mm-hmm. really did not want to see this didn't want to see this word get out. And in fact, there were several people who were at Cornell that that had ties to the dairy industry. So it's very you know, that was one of, people always, you know, people sometimes ask me what's one of the most surprising things you found out when you did this film. And a lot of this information I knew, but really certainly was really how on the take the academic institutions are, and in particularly Cornell in this case. You know, you tend to think that college campuses is a place of free thinking and liberalism, and clearly there is tied into special interest as a lot of our government institutions. It was very very dismaying to find that out.
Yeah, you sometimes have to trace where that funding comes from, or where those endowed chairs are being endowed from, or whatever. So let me let folks know, this is Talking Animals. If you just tuned in, we're speaking with Brian Wendell, executive producer of the new documentary Forks Over Knives. If you'd like to join the conversation, ask Brian a question or offer a comment, please call 813-239-9663 or email us at dj@wmnf.org. So earlier, Brian, you mentioned Facebook, and yeah, there has been, of course, tremendous response to the Forks Over Knives Facebook page. And, you know, it's interesting somehow, sometimes when things are less directly, you know, on a topic or a film's page. Like, I just happened to post, you know, that you were going to be on, and that's what today's, you know, show would be largely about. And, you know, one of the comments I got was a guy that I sort of know, who responded with like a novella length, often sort of dismissive comment about the film, and for example, he said, hey, this data has been available for decades, and cited the book Fit or Fat, which I haven't read that book, but I believe it concentrates chiefly on exercise, almost to the exclusion of diet, which, you know, seems to miss a lot of the point of your film. But, and he's, you know, his contention was there wasn't enough emphasis placed on exercise in your film.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I guess, you know, and then meanwhile, another Facebooker observes partly, I think, in response to that from her standpoint, the importance of the film, you know, partly was for the large segment of the population that maybe doesn't read as much or as widely as they might like. And this is an important way for them to get their information.
Yeah. You know, people are entitled to their opinion. Just to address the thing on exercise. Really, we wanted to isolate food as a variable because there's a lot of people that are exercising like crazy that have clogged arteries, and we find out that after a pickup basketball game or after playing tennis, they die of a heart attack.
Yeah.
And that was one of the reasons why Dr. Esselstyn in his study specifically did not give his patients instructions on exercise. That's not to say that exercise isn't important, because we know for really good vital health it is, but in terms of reversing a lot of these conditions, it's not always necessary, and food seems to be the most important factor. And in fact, even without the instructions, you see that Esselstyn's patients did really quite well, and their arteries actually, you know, open wider. It's pretty amazing. And as far as, you know, people talking about the science and things like that, that's one of the reasons in the film we have these, you know, these reality patients, as we call them.
Yeah,
is because people can take us to task on the science all they want, but at the end of the day, We tried to show that this science that we're showing in the film has an application, and it really is working out there, that we can just, you know, literally pull people off the streets who have these terrible ailments, and in a matter of weeks, you start to see dramatic improvements, and a lot of the symptoms and conditions that they have actually subside.
Right. Well, no, that's I really want to talk more about that, especially because just as it happens, one of those patients is from here, from Tampa. But let's take a caller right now and see what they have to say. Hi, you're on Talking Animals with Brian Wendell. Hi, you're on Talking Animals with Brian Wendell. Hello, it's you. Well, we hear you listening. Okay. All right, maybe a little call back. But, so then, kind of moving to that, Brian, I mean, you know, that is kind of, you know, I mentioned really sort of a multifaceted film, and one real potent complement really to the scientific and medical evidence, you know, is the way the movie kind of charts the progress of a handful of folks, including, like I said, the one Joey going from Tampa with those kind of chronic conditions who, you know, under a doctor's tutelage tackle those conditions, with the whole foods plant-based diet. Would you like to, you know, address more specifically what happened with one or more of those folks?
Yeah, I mean, first I'd say again, just, you know, what does science really mean if it doesn't mean anything to people?
Yeah.
Again, that was really important for us to address. So yeah, we have a couple of people in the film, including the writer and director of the film, the writer director really wasn't aware of it at first, but
yeah.
Ultimately there are three people in the film that have, you know, conditions, you know, hypertension, diabetes. We have one patient, the one from Tampa, who had 20 or something complaints when he goes to the doctor.
Yeah.
And really quite sick. And you see in a matter of weeks that they all, by the end of the film, they're off their medications and they're doing great. And again, this is just in a matter of weeks. So this was a really important element for us to show, is that that this, all the scientific evidence that we're presenting is really meaningful to people.
Absolutely. And how did you select those folks? I mean, and were there others selected who didn't wind up in the film?
We selected them really. Joey actually was just simply a friend of the producer, John Corey.
Okay.
And Sandera was just somebody we found through Dr. Esselstyn, and Lee was the writer and director.
Sure,
and
sure.
We did have another patient that we shot, but she didn't comply with the diet, so we weren't able to really. We had so many patients in the film, so it was only a matter of weeks that she wasn't able to stick with it, and that does in reality happen. Even
sure.
Though, you know, there's quite a bit of research. When people have these chronic ailments, they're more than likely to stick with the diet.
Sure. All right, let's try to take another call. Hi, you're on Talking Animals with Brian Wendell.
Yes.
Hi.
Hi. Yes, I kind of agree with what your guest has said, except for a few things. I've been in alternative medicine for 20 years and treated some vegans and all of this, and you can't pigeonhole everybody in just to eat vegetables or greens. I mean, if you have Polynesian people, yes, they eat fruits and vegetables, but Alaskan Eskimos eat a lot of seal and they don't have any diseases. So your ethnic background has a lot to do with it, I see. And not to say a lot of meat, and it should be clean meat like organic, which has a lot of omega-3s in it, not grain-fed, which has a lot of omega-6s in it, which causes inflammation and problems, too much omega-6. And that's really our problem. And you got to remember, Paul McCarthy, Linda McCarthy,
okay.
was a vegan, 100%, and she died of breast cancer. So you can't pigeonhole, in my eyes, everybody.
Yeah. If I could just address that.
Thanks for your call. Go ahead,
thank
Brian.
You.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Hello. Oh, geez.
Hello.
Okay. Oh, Brian. All right, hold on. We may have lost Brian. All right, I'll get him right back. You're listening to Talk Animals on WMNF. Okay, Brian's back with us. Brian, right?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Sorry. So maybe you could address that.
A couple of things.
Yeah.
First of all, regardless of what diet you want, what we're really doing is we're looking to play the best percentage that we can. And the overwhelming evidence is that a whole foods plant-based diet is best. And the other thing is, one of the reasons that we use the term whole foods plant-based is not because I'm allergic to the term vegan, unlike what some people think, and that we were trying to hide that fact or something like that. But a whole, you know, there are versions of a vegan diet that are not necessarily healthful, you could eat, you know, you could basically eat white bread, soy cheese, pizza all day, and you could easily gain weight and be heavy on a vegan diet and be quite unhealthy. So I don't know what Paul McCartney's wife was eating or anything like that. So that really doesn't say, it doesn't tell, when somebody says they are vegan, it doesn't really say what they eat.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that gentleman brought up too that I'd like to address is this concept that, you know, the meat just isn't happy enough, or it's not organic enough. But in Collins Campbell's China project, as you saw in the film, there are some regions in China where they were suffering cancer rates at 400 times the levels in some areas versus other areas. And I'll tell you, the meat and animal products they were eating there were the freshest and best, best quality you can possibly imagine, and yet these disease rates were still quite high.
Okay, so yeah, all right. Well, that I hope for our caller that at least, you know, offers a response relative to the film. Again, this is my guest is Brian Wendell, executive producer of the new documentary Forks Over Knives, and I have a few more minutes here with Brian. Let me invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663 or emailing us at dj@wmnf.org. One of our emailers, Brian, says, wasn't Dr. Esselstyn relegated to a back office at the Cleveland Clinic because there's no money for the clinic in healthy patients?
I haven't heard that story that he was relegated to a back office.
Okay.
So, I don't know. He's quite revered at the. I mean, I don't believe his situation wasn't the same as Collins.
Yeah, that sounds Campbell. Like almost, more like Dr. Campbell.
He's got quite a prestigious position at the clinic now. He's a top gun at the Wellness Institute there, so I don't believe that to be true. And while he was there, I think he was made fun of. and in the film, they used to call him, you know, he mentioned that they used to call him Dr. Sprouts, but
I
certainly don't think that he had those kind of issues.
Right. So Brian, I mean, since you did draw a contrast in response to our other caller about the vegan reference, maybe you could just tell more specifically for people listening what it really means when the phrase whole foods plant-based diet is used.
It simply means that we eat plant foods that are minimally refined, that are kind of in their close to a whole state as possible, so they still look like the thing that was pulled out of the ground that you're eating, basically. So legumes, whole grains, fresh fruits and vegetables really qualify as what we call whole plant foods. The highly refined stuff, refined sugars, bleached flour, refined oils, etc., would be not considered whole foods plant based.
And I think just to clarify maybe for folks listening, it's not whole foods is the phrase in the way that you just described it, as opposed to, you know, a direct link to the whole foods
market. That's correct. And thank you for clearing that up, because we get that all the time, that we're using whole foods meaning you have to buy the products at Whole Foods.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
These are terms that have been used by the people, you know, studying the science of this for a long time, including Dr. Campbell and Dr. Esselstyn. Both use this terminology.
Right. All right, let's take another caller. And hi, you're on the air with Brian Wendell and Talking Animals.
Jay, I'm calling from Sarasota.
Oh, hi. How's it going?
Going great. Thank you.
Yeah, a question or a comment for Brian?
Mr. Wendell, yeah.
Okay.
I'm just wondering, at what point did he switch to the idea of a whole foods, plant-based type of diet, if there was anything in his life that, you know, specifically, you know changed, or, you know, some sort of influence that,
Like a catalyst for why he...
Really wasn't in my life personally. It was about 10 years ago, and, I had been interested in eating healthily for quite some time before I went on a plant diet, and I was drinking a ton of milk, thinking I was doing myself well. And of course, just like everybody else, I was consistently getting colds and sinus infections and ear infections and all this other stuff. And I also was eating a lot of fish, thinking that was healthy for me. And I actually went to a nutritional conference at the New Yorker Hotel, and there was all these different people on a panel. It was actually somebody representing the Atkins diet there, and a zone diet, and there was a guy who says, I eat plant foods, and I decided to try that for a week, and in 1 week's time, I felt so much better. In a lot of ways, I was kind of, really curious how in 1 week you could feel so much better eating plant foods, and all these years and all this emphasis that had been put on my whole life about the importance of eating, meat and dairy, I just intuitively knew in 1 week that that wasn't true. And it was definitely a big moment in my life.
Well, thank you for that.
Thanks for your call. So Brian, we're just sort of nearing the end of our time, but yeah, so along those lines, so that sounds like it was about a 10 year kind of journey that you've been on since you went to that conference and kind of made the change in your own.
Yes, it was about 10 years ago.
Yeah.
I think it was in 2000 when that happened.
Okay.
I really just did it in one shot, and it was the best thing. I always say it's the best thing I've ever did was really switch to a plant diet.
And so where along that 10-year path did you either read the China study and or anything else that made you start to think, hey, I got to make a movie to really kind of disseminate this information in a more effective.
It was in 2008. I'd really been thinking for so long to do something, you know, I really was so passionate about this health message.
Yeah.
But I think it was around 2008 that I read the China study, the summer of 2008, where I really really became inspired to really, you know, get the information about plant-based nutrition out there. It was just so important. The fact that we're so, you know, hooked on these animal-based foods is just one of the biggest problems we have. And it not only, you know, like I was saying earlier, not only is it bad for the health, bad for our health and the environment and a terrible thing to do to animals, it's also impacting us economically as well. A large part of our economic crisis is because we're trying to, you know, our health care cost is so great, and it's really hurting companies out there.
Yeah. Well, Brian, let me just ask you before we have to say goodbye for now. I know the film has been, in terms of Florida, has been in playing in Miami and Fort Lauderdale. At the moment, as far as I know, it has not. There isn't a Tampa engagement or other engagements in Florida. Is that likely to change, or people probably just need to keep an eye out for the DVD when it's
available? Yeah, no, that's likely to change. We do anticipate that we will be in Orlando and Tampa, and in fact are working to bring the film to those, actively working to bring the film to those markets.
Oh, great.
So I would say we should have something coming up pretty soon. I know we just booked yesterday. It's not Sarasota, but it's a town near Sarasota. I don't believe it's up on our website yet, but it will be up shortly. And Tampa and Orlando are definitely on the radar screen, and I would look for it in the look for an announcement in the coming week.
Okay, great. And we'll let people know that the movie website is forksoverknives.com. This has been Brian Wendell, the executive producer and sort of creator and major thrust behind the film. Thanks to Brian for making the time to join us today on Talking Animals. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Duncan. Thanks so much for having me.
All right. Okay, I'm Duncan Strauss. You are listening to Talking Animals, where the show website is talkinganimals.net. It's time to proceed to name that animal tune. There'll be a prize, a pair of tickets to the 59th Annual Florida Folk Festival this weekend in White Springs to the first person who calls 813-239-9663 and correctly identifies this animal tune. In a moment, we'll speak with Rayanna Sachs of the Little Cats Rescue. Right now, it's Name That Animal Tune on Talking Animals.
Anything you want. Yes, you can celebrate anything you want. Oh, do a road hop where you can penetrate any place you go. Yes, you can penetrate any place you go.
All right. Well, we have a few people calling in. Actually, all right, we're going to get with Rayanna in one sec, but let's, I got people who pick them in the order. Hi, you're on Talking Animals. Can you name that animal tune?
I dig a pony by the Beatles.
There you go. What is your first name, sir?
John.
John, all right. You are our winner. I'm going to come back and get your information in a few moments. Just stand by, and thanks for playing. Congratulations. Okay, folks, we do have a winner. And We also have on the line with us at this point, Rayanna Sachs. She is the founder and CEO of the Little Cats Rescue, located in Newport Richey. And let's welcome her back to the show. Rayanna.
Hey, Duncan. Hi. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. It's so good to hear from you.
Likewise. And I guess I should start off by saying, how are the cats?
They are wonderful.
And can you say or not say how many cats currently are wonderful in your...
We are permitted to have 50 cats at the base sanctuary.
Okay.
We have enough space for 10 to 12 cats at the PetSmart Adoption Center, and we have foster homes.
Cool. So any number of cats at any given location coming in, but hopefully going out and finding forever homes, and that's what you guys do.
That's what it's all about, and spay and neuter, spay and neuter, spay and neuter.
Right. Adopt, spay and neuter. Adopt, spay and neuter, lather, rinse, repeat, right?
Absolutely.
But so now I know the organization just received kind of a nice nod. Maybe you could tell us about that for a sec.
I was so shocked when I opened the envelope. Little us. I mean, we've been doing this for 8 years, but we're just a handful of volunteers with no paid staff. And I opened a letter from the West Pasco Chamber of Commerce. We had been nominated for their outstanding achievement in for a nonprofit organization.
Wow. Congratulations.
And, I guess the winner will be announced at the banquet. I believe it's on June 10th. It's not strictly for animal groups. It's, you know, just any nonprofit. But just to be nominated, it just really shocked and amazed me and really made us feel good because we work real hard.
Boy, you sure do, and that's really, really great. So, yeah, whatever happens next, congratulations on the nomination. So, so tell us a little bit about this fundraiser that's happening tomorrow night.
This is really cool. I don't know if any of you have been to Sweet Tomatoes. It's a great place for a vegan to go. It's one of my favorite restaurants. They're located throughout Pinellas and Pasco County, I guess. The only one I've ever been to is the one in Palm Harbor. But this is actually in the new one in Port Richey on 19, just a mile north of the Gulfview Square Mall. If you go to our website or go to our Facebook page and download an invitation, go there tonight and hopefully every fourth Thursday of the month between 5 and 8. Bring your invitation, purchase your meal and a beverage, and Sweet Tomatoes will donate 20% of your bill to us.
Wow, that's really, really cool.
And so generous of them, yes.
And as far as Sweet Tomatoes, because I noticed when I saw the invitation, that is it soup plantation? Is it part of an overall thing? Because there at least was, and maybe still is, a restaurant operation in the West Coast, California, certainly where I came from, called Soup Plantation. They had these huge, amazing.
Yeah, I don't know if they're connected or
okay.
not.
Okay, all right, but either way, like you say,
they have vegan soups. They have it's just a really wonderful place.
Yeah, talk about plant based. You got the tomatoes in the name, and I think they had a pretty insane
very sweet
salad bar. There you go. There you go. So that's cool. So anyone who comes between those hours of 5 to 8 tonight to the Sweet Tomatoes in Port Richey.
Tomorrow night. Thursday.
Tomorrow night. Sorry. That's right. Tomorrow night. May 26th.
Every fourth Thursday night.
Right.
You have to come with an invitation. They won't allow us to hand them out on the property.
Okay.
But it's easy to get. Just go to our website, thelittlecatsrescue.org, or go to our Facebook page, and you can download an invitation from that.
That's so simple, and it's so nice that they're doing that, and great that it's an ongoing thing as well. So for some reason somebody has a commitment tonight on the fourth Thursday of June, they'll make their way over if they can and help out and get
and
themselves
have a good meal in the process.
There you go. Can't beat that. So
win-win situation.
Yeah, no, it's really terrific. So so things are sounds like generally going good over at the Little Cats Rescue. I know, you know, at least one of the times we spoke, it was sort of a series of unfortunate things that happened weather-wise and otherwise, and it sounds like you're kind of in a much better place.
Awesome things have been happening. A couple of years ago, we rescued a little kitten for these people, and they came back, and we've been wanting to screen in the front area. So I have a little bit of a barrier between the world and the cats, and they're doing a phenomenal, phenomenal job at something that is amazingly affordable for us.
Oh, great.
So that'll be done on Friday, and we are having adoptions. And this past Saturday, in conjunction with another no-kill shelter, the SPCA of the Sun Coast here in Newport Richey, we were able to save 18 cats and kittens off of death row at animal control.
Wow.
They were literally hours away from death, and we took 7 adults and 3 kittens, and they took the rest of the kittens.
Wow.
I brought them over to them, and they're already getting spayed, neutered in foster homes. And that's the answer, folks. We can't adopt our way out. We certainly cannot or should not kill our way out. We need to trap, neuter, and return or adopt these poor babies. They're so precious, and all they want is love.
Sure. Well, and speaking of that, Rihanna, that sounds like an incredibly successful adoption event just this last weekend. How often is the Little Cats Rescue doing adoption events, and where are they, or could people go to your website and find those things out?
You can go to the website and you can download an application. We do home visits and we do vet reference checks. We try to match the cat with the person,
mm-hmm.
so nobody gets disappointed with the wrong match. We are at the PetSmart at Trinity, 54 on Little Road. We're there all the time. We have wonderful volunteers that come up and spend time with the cats, get them out playing, moving around, and let you meet them. By appointment only, you can come to the sanctuary to meet someone that's here or one of the foster homes.
Okay, so that's an important distinction, I think, for people to know, that they can't just turn up at the...
I don't think my neighbors would like it. We live in a residential section, and
right.
we fought long and hard to be able to have the 50 that we have here.
Sure, sure. So you gotta.
We pray, hope, and dream that even if we don't win this award, that's fine. We got nominated and recognized. Maybe out of it will come our own freestanding facility, which we dream of having.
Sure.
Which will include a low-cost spay-neuter clinic and low-cost vaccination center.
Right.
And a place for leukemia cats to live happily and safely and. You know, I got big dreams.
Sure. Well, no, that's great, because that's how things keep happening. And one day, maybe somebody will come along and say, hey, you know what? I'm your benefactor.
Well,
so.
You know, it's not that it's not been done before. I know there's a group down in Sarasota that was given a 10,000-square-foot building, and that's how the Cat Depot started down there. So
well, there you go.
Things are possible for those who believe and just keep putting one foot in front of the other, saving them one cat at a time. And don't let them out, especially if they're not spayed and neutered.
Right. Or put one paw in front of the other, as the case may be.
There
but,
you go.
But Rihanna, cool. Okay, well, again, it's the Little Cats, and that's plural, littlecatsrescue.org for all
right.
kinds of other additional.
You have to put the word the because we go as TLC.
Right,
the
right.
littlecatsrescue.org.
Right, so that's where you can get more information, and if you're interested in adopting and
mm-hmm.
Download your app.
Ways to tell you how to take care of a little orphaned kitten that doesn't have its mother. You know, if you found one, because we can't bottle feed, but if we all work together, just like the SPCA and we worked together on Saturday, I went out and got them, brought them the kittens. We got to do it together, folks.
Right.
We can't deviate from that.
All right. Well, Rihanna, congratulations. Keep up the great work, and hopefully we'll see all kinds of folks out tomorrow night from 5 to 8 p.m. at the Sweet Tomatoes in Port Richey. Thanks again, Rihanna, for joining us on Talking
Thank
Animals.
Thank you so much for calling on me, Duncan.
All right. Take care now.
Take care.
Bye-bye. All right. We have just about reached the end of today's edition of Talking Animals on WMNF Tampa. We'll be back next Wednesday, June 1st, when our guests will be Paula Poundstone, comedian extraordinaire, cat lover extraordinaire, and panelist extraordinaire on the NPR game show Wait, Wait! Don't Tell Me. That's next Wednesday, June 1st on Talking Animals at 11 a.m. June being the month that Talking Animals celebrates its 8th anniversary. Yeah, I launched this crazy little show in Southern California in June of 2003. Anyway, I hope you'll join me next Wednesday, and all Wednesdays, really, for that matter. Also, hope you visit our website, talkinganimals.net, where we make available all sorts of information, as well as archives and podcasts of past Talking Animals. We also have a link to the Talking Animals Facebook page, or Twitter feed, and more. That's all found at talkinganimals.net. Talking Animals broadcast outreach consultant is Libby McKenna. My thanks to her. I'm Duncan Strauss. Thanks very much for listening. Good week. Be kind to animals. Be kind to others. Be kind to yourself. Today is the final Oprah show, a momentous occasion on any number of levels, very much including everything she did for animal welfare. So hats off to her. Meanwhile, stay tuned for the fabulous Scott Elliott with the All Souls version of It's the Music, airing next from noon to 3. We're closing out today's show, as always, with an animal tune. This one from Minus the Bear, who obviously, of course, also have an animal name. Love Minus the Bear. Great band. One of my favorite studio visits in the old Sonic Detour days is when Minus the Bear came in, chatted, and played a few songs. They're performing tonight at the Ritz Ebor alongside another fave, the Constellations. So, right now, this is Minus the Bear with Animal Backwards, taking us up to the NPR News, and then Scott Elliott and his great, great show. Right here on WMNF Tampa. We'll see you next Wednesday, 11 a.m. on Talk Animals. Thanks for listening. Take care.
She's a wolf looking through my window. She's a wolf looking through my window. And though I've saved my love, I won't roam behind this pain, behind this wall of soul. Caught in the pull of your green-eyed glow, I wanna feel my skin in the snow.